Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
This is Talk Radio. Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We've got lots going on this morning, ladies and gentlemen, and we need your help to take the temperature of the nation. After the Freedom Day rehearsal yesterday, we know where we stand. Almost everyone now calling for more lockdowns, more restrictions and more controlling of the populace, the beleaguered populace that is us, is now in the box reserved for the overcautious, the risk-averse, the anxious and those who have very nice houses to isolate away from everybody else. Because the rest of us just want to get on with it, don't we? For heaven's sake, the cat is very much out of the bag. Tell us what you're seeing, tell us what you're hearing, and tell us if your entire attitude has now changed. I was wandering around London yesterday. It was very clear to me that there are more and more people who have just said, you know what? To hell with it. To hell with you, Boris. To hell with your restrictions. And to hell with behaving like some kind of, you know, ridiculous nanny state and The Handmaid's Tale. Walking around, not looking at anyone, keeping a mask over your face, covering your head, walking about 5 metres away from the person in front of you. No, no longer, I think you will find, are sensible people doing any of that. First up, we've got Ben Habib, chairman of Unlocked and former Brexit Party MEP. I'll be asking him about his take on the lockdown, which I think is easing, not because the government wants it to ease, but because the people want it to ease. He's also going to be talking about the report for the Commons Education Committee that came out late last night, that white working class pupils are suffering more than any other group at the ages of 5, at the ages of 16, and at the ages of 18 as well. The committee found that the phrase white privilege has never been more untrue. It's an absolute shocker, but of course, comes as no surprise to me, because I've been telling you this for years. 0344 499 1000. Coming up later on, we'll be broaching the incredible story that emerged this weekend about the ghastly treatment being handed out to British people who are forced to quarantine in hotels after returning from abroad. And before you start jumping all over them, these are not people who are returning from abroad because they've been on holiday. They're either returning from abroad because they've been visiting sick relatives, or they're returning from abroad because they had to go and see somebody or take somebody to another person. These are not people who are having a jolly, by the way. The food they're being presented with, though, is worse than anything served up in prison. The accommodation is anything but good enough for the enforced price of £1,700 per person, and it's all likely to come to an end in a couple of weeks anyway. Simon Calder will talk to us about that. But what exactly is the point? And why are the government allowing it to go on? There's, again, loads of people making loads of money out of this, and I'm afraid it's simply not good enough. If you've got a story, you want to hear it. 0344 499 1000. Coming up later on, we've also got an amazing tale about the BBC and how hopeless it has become. We are joined by Danny Kelly, a former presenter at BBC West Midlands, who will tell us a tale of woe about just how out of touch local BBC radio bosses actually are and why they hate their own audience. We're joined by former England manager Glenn Hoddle as well, ahead of the final group games tonight for Gareth Southgate and, of course, Scotland, with the COVID background cancelling out players even as we speak. Stuart Weir will give the Scottish side of the story. And, of course, we've got Georgie Frost, we've got Kevin O'Sullivan on as well, and Donna Harvey from the US of A, all bringing their particular and unique perspectives to the show, as you would expect, because we are, of course, the original. We are the best. We are Talk Radio, and we ain't going nowhere. This is the Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, it's a much better looking day out there than it was yesterday. I mean, despite the rain, I did manage to go for a very nice lunch to the Ox Hotel, which was very, very well appointed, very well attended. Lots of people there having a very good time. So I would just like to thank them for charging me such a lot of money that I now won't be able to go out for about a week. But that's the way it goes, you know. I don't expect favours. I don't expect freebies. I pay my way. And I also want to see the hospitality sector bouncing back, because that's what we're here for. Let us kick off, though, straight away with Ben Habib, chairman of Unlocked, former Brexit Party MEP, of course. Ben, a very good morning to you.
Morning, Mike.
Do you, like me, feel the sort of thrust of optimism and the way that people are changing their attitudes towards the lockdown? It seems to me that a lot of people have now just gone, that's it, we're on.
I think they have, and fewer and fewer people are wearing masks. You know, I went to my club this morning, and you're meant to wear your mask. It's ridiculous. You're meant to wear your mask as you walk in, but you can take it off the minute you're in the gym.
Right.
And people have been adhering to that absurd rule for, you know, months, but they're coming in now without their masks. And there's a kind of normalcy now about not wearing a mask. You know, I'm sure we've all felt this kind of embarrassment if we haven't had a mask on than others have. But I think we're beginning to get back to a position, I just feel it, where you don't feel so idiotic if you've got your mask off. You feel normal, and you're not beheld by others as someone idiotic. So I think we are heading back to normal, and I think people want it.
Yes, I think so. Ben, we're just going to try and check your microphone, because it's sounding a little bit slightly off kilter. But so bear with us while we try and just get a slightly better sound out of Ben's devices there, because we want to know what he thinks about a great many things this morning. And what particularly we want to know about is a report in the papers this morning about the Commons Education Committee, who last night basically issued a report saying that the white working class children of this country have been betrayed. Major social injustices have been going on. They've been forgotten for generations. They've been neglected by teachers because of divisive concepts like white privilege. And I think it's time to stand up and say, look, enough is enough. This is not about equality anymore. This is about actually the doing down of people because they're white. Now, let's not forget, the BBC only yesterday were in hot water for putting out an advert for a job up in Scotland, which white people could not apply for. Now, apparently they can get around the law by saying, oh, well, of course, you know, we're underrepresented in ethnic minority areas up in Scotland, which, of course, Scotland is underrepresented because there's not an awful lot of people up in Scotland in the same way that there are in London, for example, who are from black and minority ethnic backgrounds. But you cannot put an advert in, surely, any arena. Can you imagine if we put an advert here at Talk Radio and say only white people could apply? Can you imagine that? I can't. Let's go back to Ben. I think we might fix the problem. Ben, sorry about that.
Yeah, can you hear me now, Mike?
Yes, that's better. There was just a little crackling on the line there, which I just wanted to try and eradicate. Let's talk a little bit about this education report, which is out this morning, in which we are told, basically, that teachers have used such divisive concepts for so long now that actually the people who are suffering the most in our schools in this country are the white working class. Now, I've been banging this particular drum for a couple of years now. Finally, the Commons Select Committee on Education has agreed with me.
Well, I was delighted to see their report. I mean, you do not get over racial division by incessantly referring to it, which is effectively what critical race theory is. Mm. And just to remind listeners, you know, the idea behind it is this: if you're white, you're automatically privileged. You have some kind of privilege that comes with your skin color. And to teach children that is to basically be telling white children that there's something inherently advantageous about being white and therefore wrong, and telling colored children, or BAME or whatever they want to call them, children, that actually they're victims. Mm. Either way, it's a totally unhealthy way to bring children up. The way I was brought up, and I imagine you were, Mike, was that we were told to be color blind.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what ethnic background you're from. What matters is the contribution you're going to make to society, what kind of person you are. That's what matters. Better yourself. Don't incessantly look over your shoulder and claim victimhood if you happen to be from Bangladesh or Pakistan. I mean, it's absurd.
Well, exactly. I mean, maybe it's time some of these white, underprivileged working class kids started claiming victimhood on the grounds that they're white, because they've got more claim to it, apparently, now than anyone.
Yeah. I mean, there's a huge underclass of white people that is overlooked by government. And I'm not going to digress, but, you know, if you look at the unemployment figures, they look pretty healthy. Mm. In fact, there's unemployment figures only count those who are actively looking for a job. But there are swaths of people in the north of England, in Scotland, in Northern Ireland, who are white and not even looking for a job. They've just been overlooked by the system. These are the people that Boris Johnson should be focusing on for his levelling up agenda. So I completely agree with you. Being white, it is no privilege in this country, certainly not anymore.
No, and I mean, I'm particularly interested in this, Ben, because as you do, I've got two children who are teenagers, 16 and 14, who will be looking for jobs at some point in the next five or so years, I dare say, in one way or another. And I'm concerned that they will be prevented from getting certain jobs because of the colour of their skin.
Yeah, well, there's definitely an inbuilt prejudice in the system. You know, when they talk about systemic racism, as you're rightly indicating, Mike, the racism actually is aimed at white people. It's for the promotion of minorities to the detriment of what they regard as the white majority. And you see that with Sadiq Khan repeatedly.
Yes.
You know, he wants 40% of the Met to be from ethnic backgrounds. Well, actually, 86% of people in London are white. So on what basis is he promoting this agenda?
Right.
You know, why is he giving an unfair advantage to certain people because of their skin colour? That is racism.
Yeah. And as we saw with the divisiveness of the taking of the knee by England players and Gareth Southgate's ludicrous kind of videos and you know, speeches about why anyone who opposes it is somehow racist, you know, an awful lot of this separation technique, as I call it, has actually caused people to become more racist, hasn't it?
It has, absolutely. You know, I was in a very happy place, actually, growing up in this country. I never once felt that there was any prejudice against me. But I feel the weight of prejudice much more now because of this apparent attempt by people trying to teach critical race theory, this attempt to bolster minorities at the expense of the white majority, the white ethnic majority that were, you know, indigenous to this island, for goodness sake. And it's just completely wrong. And if people want to take the knee at football, you know, the football match, as ridiculous as I think it is, fair enough, take the knee. But for goodness sake, allow people to boo as well. That is their right to object. And I would boo it because I think it's entirely wrong to be promoting the ideology of BLM, which is an anarchist, socialist, anti-capitalist movement designed to hit the very foundations of our beliefs in the United Kingdom. That's what that movement is. And if I were to see the English football team taking the knee, I would think it's wrong. I wouldn't stop them from doing it, but I would certainly boo them.
Yeah, but isn't it fascinating, Ben, that UEFA yesterday came out and investigated Manuel Neuer, the German goalkeeper, for wearing a rainbow armband in support of the LGBT community, in case it might be political. But they haven't bothered to investigate, you know, the England team to work out whether or not their taking of the knee is in any way political.
I mean, the whole thing's just ridiculous, isn't it? Or be just chucked out of court. It's absurd.
Yeah, it really is. We're still going to try and fix that microphone of yours, Ben. Stay with us. We're going to stop for a moment. Ben Habib is with us, chairman of Unlocked, a former Brexit Party MEP. We're talking about this report from the Commons Select Committee on Education, in which it says that basically white underclass, working class people are the most underrepresented, the most underachieving, and the most prejudiced against group of all time. It's extraordinary. This is Talk Radio.
This is Talk Radio across the UK, online, on DAB+, and on the Talk Radio app. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We're talking to Ben Habib, chairman of Unlocked, former Brexit Party MEP, of course, as well. Ben, welcome back. We've got a few other things to discuss. I mean, obviously, we've got the football coming up tonight. Another kind of mockery, if you like, of the sort of the rules. It would seem that if you're a Scottish football player and you test positive for COVID, none of the rest of your teammates have to worry. But two people who might have played a bit close to you when they were playing for England might have to self-isolate. I mean, it's kind of madness now, isn't it?
Well, we've got to stop. We've got to stop all these COVID restrictions as soon as possible. We've got to get back to normal. You know, we started the programme on it and people are fed up. The whole point about the vaccination programme, we were told, was once it was rolled out, that would be the end of the COVID restrictions, that we would go back to life as it was. We have herd immunity in this country. We have got it. And we cannot live in perpetual fear of a variant that is somehow immune to the virus, to the vaccination. So we, you know, two English players not being allowed to play football is just symptomatic of how we've become entirely intolerant of the coronavirus. It's a disease which, you know, unlike any other disease, we're not prepared to tolerate in any shape or form. We've got this kind of zero tolerance to coronavirus. And I don't agree with much of what Theresa May says, but she was very good in the Commons the other day when she said the Prime Minister actually has to be honest with the people and explain that there will be deaths every year, probably in perpetuity, from coronavirus, just like there are from flu.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? The numbers are so insignificant now that the Telegraph hasn't even got them on the front page anymore. I mean, I think I'm right in saying this is the first day since the start of the pandemic that they haven't actually got that little box with all the statistics in it.
You know, it's not about how many people have been exposed to it or how many people have tested positive. It's about how many people are developing symptoms and how many of those are ending up in hospital. Actually, the only job government should be aiming to do is making sure the NHS operates. And actually, a year and a half into the pandemic, you would have thought that actually the NHS would be able to now cope, even if there was significant infections and illness from it. You know, we've had a year and a half of government to get this thing sorted. They built all those Nightingale hospitals. They never used them. They decommissioned them. And now there are mutterings that if there's a rise in coronavirus disease during the autumn, you know, winter months, that we might have lockdowns again. No, that's just a failure in government. They can't claim that they were unaware of the pandemic. We've had it for over a year. The NHS should now be fit for purpose. We should go back to normal. Footballers who've been vaccinated and come into contact with other footballers who happen to test positive shouldn't have to self-isolate. They should just play.
Yeah. Exactly right. It just makes no sense whatsoever. And again, we're told that, you know, the stadium at Wembley is going to be more full for the quarterfinals and very possibly for the final than it is now. We've seen what's going on in Hungary. We've seen Denmark playing yesterday to a pretty much a full capacity stadium. And people are moaning, saying, oh, well, yeah, but they've all had to prove they've had two jabs. Well, you have to prove that to go to Wembley. So why can they not just fill it?
Yeah, just fill it. Absolutely. Yeah. Get on with it. And yeah, get on with, you know, and you don't actually need this vaccination passport system. The government knows that 2/3 of the adult population have been vaccinated. Yeah. That's herd immunity.
Yeah, right. So just take everybody's word for it, right? And if you want to go to a massive sporting event, having not been vaccinated, and you wish to take that particular risk, then let people take the risk, for God's sake.
Absolutely. Put the risk, the onus of your self-responsibility back on the self,
yeah,
back onto people. It's not for government to micromanage our health.
Absolutely right. One final question for you, Ben. A big debate going on at the moment, and some say that the planning laws were responsible for the by-election result in Chesham and Amersham. A lot of talk about building more homes, why we have to, where we must build them, where we must not build them. I mean, you know a thing or two about property. What's your kind of suggestion that we should do to enable more people to be able to get affordable housing and for other people just to be able to live in places where there are enough facilities for them, schools, hospitals, all of that?
Yeah, well, the biggest problem with housing and government response to the lack of it has been that instead of improving supply, government has typically actually boosted demand. And they sell it as if they're helping you get on the housing ladder. But all these cheap loans and government finance to help banks make, you know, lend out mortgages, that only boosts demand. That actually makes it more difficult in the long term for people to get on the ladder. What the government needs to do is to increase supply. And part of that has to be through the planning system. But there's a huge amount of brownfield sites, not greenfield sites, but brownfield sites that could be brought into use very quickly. It won't surprise you to know, Mike, that even though the government talks about the need for planning reform, it's going for the easy option. It's going for the greenfield sites, and it's not deregulating the complex process of bringing brownfield sites into different uses, and in this case, residential use. So there are huge hurdles you have to go through in order to get planning permission to convert an office block, for example, into residential. And they need to cut all of that bureaucracy so that as office blocks, which are now going to be less used as a result of, you know, working from home and all those changing practices, those office blocks, those redundant properties can be brought into the residential market.
Yeah.
But I think the Amersham and Chesham situation is very convenient, isn't it, for the Conservative Party to blame HS2 and to blame planning.
Yeah.
Two issues, you know, but actually not take responsibility for a falling level of general popularity. And we've had a year and a half of government now in this pandemic. We've had a year and a half of lockdowns. We've had a year and a half of our liberties taken away. We've had government debt go up by 33%. We've had GDP collapse by 10%. We've got 4 million people still on furlough. These may be some of the reasons why the good folk of Amersham and Chesham have decided to, you know, give Boris Johnson a bloody nose at the polling stations.
Yes, that obviously hasn't occurred to him because he thinks he's the world's most popular man, but he may find out that that's not entirely the case. Ben, great to talk to you. Thank you very much indeed. Ben Habib, chairman of Unlocked, former Brexit Party MEP, another great voice of common sense on all subjects, which is why we love to get people like Ben on this show, because what we need to do is try to engender this government to try and enforce common sense upon them, because they have clearly lost the plot when it comes to common sense. I mean, you know, who can tell me what the rules for COVID actually now are? Who can say what you're supposed to do if your child comes home having been sent there by the school to say that he has to self-isolate? Who can say what you then have to do, or what his siblings have to do, what his sister has to do, what his brother has to do, what your mother has to do? Nobody knows anymore. It's a waste of time. And this whole stramash with England and Scotland, nobody has a clue what's going on there.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Right now, though, let us go to our guru of travel, Mr. Simon Calder, travel editor of The Independent, who we haven't seen for a while on this show. Simon, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, yes, from London, England. I've just been actually tracking, Mike, the fortunes of London's biggest airports. Heathrow began the crisis as the busiest in Europe. It's now slipped to 17th.
Oh, goodness.
Really interestingly, if you track the vaccine rollout and you track the passenger numbers and the position in the European League, the more people we vaccinate, the worse Heathrow gets. And poor old Gatwick used to be in the top 10. It's now 106th.
Mm.
And this is all because people don't want you to go travelling, Mike.
Well, this is the trouble, isn't it? You and I have had
many...
I
mean, nothing personal.
No, nothing personal. Well, well, there are some people that want me to get the hell out of here so that they don't have to see me here, so I can go somewhere else. But, you know, it's a complicated equation. But here's the thing, Simon. It seems to me that the government doesn't want us to go anywhere. They've made it more and more difficult for people to go anywhere. And yet now we're seeing on the front page of the Times this morning that they're thinking of doing away with the quarantine rules altogether. We've just been talking to a young lady who had a terrible time in the Russell Square Hotel in which she was quarantining because the food was ghastly. You will have seen some of this stuff over the course of the last few days. They seem to be getting this all wrong, don't they?
Well, it's no surprise that the government is looking at, well, could we possibly, because we keep telling everybody how fantastically successful the vaccine program is and how effective the vaccines are, tell you what, we could actually reduce the 10 days of self-isolation that anybody coming back from France, Spain, Italy, Greece, the US needs to do. And that would kind of improve the fortunes of the travel industry, which is on the point of collapse. But the thing is, I was writing about other countries doing this in early February. Mm. Estonia and Georgia said, Mike, if you want to come over, if you've had your jabs, and we know you're a young fellow, so it won't be for many months.
Much.
But if you want to, when you've had your jabs, that's fine. No quarantine, because we know that you will present a lower risk.
Mm.
And the fact that they're now saying, actually, we could do this, but we're not in actually any hurry to do it, shows that it's really just a kind of campaign against international travel.
Yes.
You can walk out of your studio and go anywhere you want to in the world, Mike, without quarantine, as long as it's Gibraltar or Iceland.
Yes, but this is the thing. I was just going to ask you this question, because there was all sorts of measures put in. For example, if I wanted to fly to New York tomorrow, I was supposed to show some kind of evidence that I had to go there for one reason or another, either for business or for something. Do you still have to do that?
No, you don't. But the government has really confused everybody. So if you go if you go back to the 17th of May, that was when the ban on international leisure travel, which had been going on for 19 weeks, came to an end. 2 days later, the Prime Minister said, well, obviously, you shouldn't go to any country other than a green country. It's essential travel only. It's not. You can go to India. I mean, there's a flight this afternoon. You can fly off to Delhi. Mike, I'm not suggesting you do.
Yes, it's a very fine city. I've been there already. It's a lovely place. I wouldn't mind going back.
Oh, sure. But perhaps not right now.
No.
Anyway, there is nothing to stop you going. But when you come back, you will face very, very heavy restrictions. And worth pointing out that the Labour Party doesn't think the restrictions are tight enough. They want Malta and France and Spain and Greece and Italy added to the rest.
Nobody cares what they think, though, Simon. So, I mean, you might as well not mention them. You might as well tell me what, you know, Charlie Chaplin thinks about the rules. I mean, about as popular as he is. What about this story, though, that they will lift the quarantine? How imminent is that? There's a lot of talk that July the 5th might be a date that we get some kind of action.
There's all sorts of talk about days when you might get some action. But the thing is, the summer is already being destroyed in terms of outbound tourism. In Glasgow, in 2 days' time, the schools break up at lunchtime. It's summer already. And they can go to, well, pretty much anywhere they want to in the UK, apart from kind of what you and I quaintly used to call Lancashire.
Yes. Manchester apparently is a no-go area for Scottish people. I can't imagine why.
Well, it is. And Bolton and Salford and Blackburn as well, while we're naming them. Similarly, if you were in any of those areas and you wanted to go to Scotland, well, you can't. So there's restrictions in place. But overseas travel is effectively, to show you how desperate the airlines are, the last throw of the dice for EasyJet was, let's launch new flights from Liverpool for the summer. Now, in a normal year, you and I would be thinking, oh, is it going to go to the Azores? Is it going to go to Marrakesh or Mykonos or something? No, it's going to Bournemouth.
Bournemouth's nice, but I wouldn't want to fly there particularly.
But if you lived in Liverpool...
I mean, suppose it gets you around the M27 nightmare, because it is a terrible road there. But, you know, so if I was to look at... You know, one of those plane maps that you see, where all the planes are all over the various different countries, would I see Europe, mainland Europe, as a complete morass of planes, and Britain as hardly any?
Oh yes, absolutely. Just in the past hour, the boss of Eurocontrol, which is the kind of main air traffic control place... For Europe, has just tweeted out, we saw Italy up 28%, France up 21%. Everyone's improving, except the UK, down 3% last week.
Yeah.
It is it is exactly the opposite of a vaccine dividend. It's what's the opposite of a dividend?
I think it's whatever the opposite of Croesus was, you know, the ancient. I used to say that everything he touches turns to gold. In this case, it's the complete reverse.
Yes.
But, you know, what's interesting is that, you know, there doesn't appear to be any sort of cogent plan going on. And I know this is not going to come as any great piece of breaking news to you, Simon, but they seem to sort of go from day to day. Nobody can book a holiday. No travel company can know what's coming next. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, no, it's not. It's very simply just mirrors what's happening in the COVID-O. Which is the big meeting that they're going to be having on Thursday morning about this, and probably leaks will start coming out during your programme in the nicest possible sense.
Yes.
So you've got effectively three people on one side, and that is Michael Gove, Cabinet Secretary, Priti Patel, the Home Secretary, and Matt Hancock, the Health Secretary, and none of them want any international travel at all. Going abroad is bad. People coming into the UK is bad. That's where they're going. Then you've got on the other side Rishi Sunak, who sort of says, actually, you know, aviation, travel, that used to be quite important. And, you know, if you're going to make all those people out of work, they're going to want universal credit and they won't be paying tax. So maybe we could rescue that. And the transport secretary, whose job apparently is protecting the travel industry. Anyway, the last two keep getting outvoted. That's probably what's going to happen again. So, there's no appetite whatsoever for international travel. And it kind of goes back to the terror that we're going to have a repeat of the Delta variant, where if you delay for long enough closing the borders to particular threats that you know about, then it's going to be a disaster. So this is, as you kind of often see in these things, it's a huge overreaction,
yes,
which is causing endless damage, not just to people like me who wants to go on holiday, and you. I mean,
I'm not having it anymore, Simon, that these people say, oh, just because you want to go on holiday. No, these are businesses that are thriving businesses that were once massive net contributors to the Chancellor of the Exchequer's Treasury, in taxes that are paid and in jobs that are created. I mean, I'm not buying this nonsense anymore that, you know, we're just selfish because we want to go abroad. No, we want tourists to come here as well. We want hotels to be full. You know, I'm sick of it.
Well, no, I mean, they have destroyed the inbound tourism industry, yeah, as a sort of collateral damage. But they will say, well, of course, those people will go on holiday in the UK. Look, everybody in the UK wants to go to Cornwall or the Lake District. They do not want to go to Stratford-on-Avon. They don't want to spend 500 quid a night in five-star hotels in London. That's what overseas tourists coming in do. So it doesn't, it's not a direct substitute at all. But I was just going to mention, of course, yeah, here we are talking about holidays and the economy. Of course, emotion comes into this as well. There are so many people who've been separated from their loved ones for over a year. Yeah. They are just desperate to travel.
I'm one of them.
And they can't.
I mean,
yes, I know.
You know, I keep expecting there to be some form of opening up, and I don't know whether you can give me any hope of anything today, Simon.
Right.
But if you can, here's my final offer to you is to cheer me up with some news about an American England corridor.
Well, unfortunately, Joe Biden is no fan of the Delta variant, and he's already tweeted about the danger it's posing for the UK.
Yeah, that was a while ago, though, wasn't it?
Sorry.
That was before he came here. And he didn't seem to mind. He didn't seem to mind about the Delta variant when he's putting his arm around Emmanuel Macron.
Well, steady on. He's French, isn't he?
Well, he is. But I mean, all these political leaders who tell us all we can't do anything, then go off and do all the things that they tell us we can't do. I'm sick of them as well.
Oh, look, I'm going to mark your card for early August, and I will hope to see you at the airport then. But I mean, frankly, that depends on the US being put on the amber list, and at the moment, one has absolutely no idea if the government's going to follow the data that it says it's following, and so all bets are off, I'm afraid, Mike.
You've depressed me, Simon. I'm never having you on again until you can tell me some good news. Simon Calder, travel editor of The Independent. It's just awful, isn't it? Everyone's flying around in Europe. We're not flying anywhere apart from Liverpool to Bournemouth. Brilliant. Marvellous. Fantastic. And it's not about holidays, right? It's about seeing relatives. It's about travelling for educational purposes. It's about work. It's about all manner of things. But what it isn't about is these maniacs in Downing Street who don't want anyone to go anywhere. That might be all right for Matt Hancock. I wouldn't want him to go anywhere either. I'd just like him to get out of Downing Street, for heaven's sake. This is Talk Radio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. There is only one thing to do, and that is now to introduce you to Mr. Danny Kelly, a radio presenter who used to work for the BBC but doesn't anymore. Danny, a very, very good morning to you. Welcome.
And a very good morning, Mike. And thanks
very much indeed for joining us. Now, Danny, tell us a little bit about your career. Tell us a little bit about how you worked for the BBC and tell us a little bit about why you no longer work for the BBC.
Well, I had a varied career, really, at the BBC. I presented a number of shows. The last 4 or 5 years, I presented a very successful mid-morning show. We had like 8% market share at one point, Mike, which, as you know, that's really quite high for a local radio station with so many stations and competitors out there. And unfortunately, in the last 5 or 6 years, to borrow a very common term nowadays, I believe the station has gone completely 100% woke, and it's ignored and almost sacrificed and abandoned our core audience, who are, you know, we live in a conservative, a small C conservative region. We're very Brexity. We've got a conservative mayor. We've got conservative councils everywhere, conservative MPs in what were Labour strongholds. And I believe that the station struggled ideologically to actually cater for those people. And I believe that they've abandoned the core audience. And what makes me so particularly sad about the situation, Mike, it's not about me and my job. I'm not financially dependent on anybody. I'm not beholden to anybody either. But what makes me sad, Mike, is that I was told that they no longer, you used the word hate earlier. The word I would use is that they don't care about their older audience, Mike. So long as people in their 70s and 80s tick the Rage Our Audience quarterly figures, you know, that you and I depend on,
yeah,
then they take them for granted. They call them legacy listeners, Mike, which I find offensive. Mm. And I'm not in my 70s and 80s. What they mean by that is that it doesn't matter what sort of garbage they put out on air. They know that people in their 70s and 80s are still going to give WM the hours that they crave, 30 hours a week, and they'll tick the box. And they've abandoned them. They won't let them on air, Mike.
So what do they say to you as you're a presenter? I mean, do they specifically say that, or do they sort of hint at it? What do they say?
No, they say that, Mike. They won't say it in public, but they say they don't want old sounding voices on air. Now, these old sounding voices, Mike, you know, if they're in their 70s and 80s, it doesn't mean that they're not coherent. It means that some of them are razor sharp, and it should be a meritocracy. People should be allowed on air on the quality of what they've got to say, not on their age. So what they do say is, and they say this to everyone, they don't want old sounding people on the radio because it's going to not attract the next generation of more youthful listeners. And that's on record. If they won't say it in public, but it's on record. Mm. Everybody knows it, Mike. And these people pay their licence fee.
Well, exactly.
They still have to pay. It's like the BBC want the £157.50 of them, but they don't want their opinions.
Yes. It's a shocking state of affairs, because also, if it wasn't for the people who are probably over the age of 60 or so, they wouldn't have a BBC licence fee fund, because young people are not buying licences. I meet more and more people every day, Danny, who have basically said, we don't pay the licence. My kids, who are teenagers, don't watch the BBC, certainly don't listen to any local radio output. And I've been banging on about this for a long time, that there's over 63 or 4, I think, different local BBC radio stations. And what they've done is they've killed off local media, they've killed off local newspapers, because they're just such a huge kind of behemoth, and they've all got all the money. And only I tried to start up a radio station, speech radio station in Edinburgh, but we couldn't succeed with it commercially because of BBC Scotland.
Yeah, Mike, listen, what's again saddening is that I hear my old callers on your show, mate, and the reason that they've migrated to talk radio and your great show is because you're not afraid to cover certain talking points. I'll give you some examples, Mike.
Yeah.
Shamima Begum, the first story 4 years ago, they didn't want me to cover it. Reason right. being is that they didn't want the type of bigoted, quote-unquote, racists who were going to call in. I've said to my station editor, for the last few years, we need to define as a station what racist means.
Yes.
Just because they hold different views to you doesn't mean that they're racist. No. Another example, Gary Lineker.
But isn't that just to interrupt you for a second, Danny, isn't that why we are in this terrible state in Britain? Because you might not think it's a good idea to bring a young woman back from a refugee camp in a war-torn country because she took part in some very violent behaviour with an outlawed terrorist group. That makes you a racist. I mean, hello?
Mike, it's crazy. But unfortunately, the management at the BBC, you are by default, unfortunately, classed as a racist. And I was banging my head against the wall so many times. People wouldn't get on air, Mike. And when I used to buzz through to the ops room saying, why ain't he coming on air? They would say, well, he's talking about immigration. He's got a problem with Eastern Europeans. He's racist. No, he's not racist. All he's got, he lives in a different world to the management, who don't want them on air because they don't want these quote-unquote bigoted racists on air. And that's why they've gone to successful talk shows like yourself, mate. Honestly, mate, I could cry.
I know. It's a shocking state of affairs because, Danny, I mean, you've been a fine broadcaster for a long time. You know, 10 years ago when they had you working there, you had a very popular show. The people loved you. I mean, you're obviously... I mean, I know your brother quite well. I mean, you're much nicer than he is, I have to say. The editor of the New European. But the point is that, you know, you have got an audience and now they've taken that audience away quite deliberately because they don't like their own audience.
Yeah, again, going back to like or hate, or my word would be care. They definitely don't care. They are obsessed, Mike, with a youthful, diverse audience. Now, my boss said that he's under pressure from his boss from London to have a lineup that represents the city. Now, my boss said the lineup, the schedule is too old and too white. He's also said the listeners are too old and too white. And again, well, this is why I feel so sorry for the listeners. They can't help getting old. They can't help being born with the colour white with their birth. And they're too old and too white. They're desperate for a younger, more diverse audience. That's going to be reflected, I believe, in the coming weeks and months with a more diverse audience. They've just got rid of another lad. They've just ditched another middle-aged white fella off breakfast. He's gone back to sports. He was a great broadcaster. So what they're doing, and also what they're doing, normally, Mike, you don't make wholesale changes at once because the listeners can't cope and they go elsewhere. But what they said to me is that they're going to make wholesale changes whilst there's no radar. Mm. So that by the time that radar come back, then hopefully things will have bedded in.
Well, it won't, though. I mean, it won't because it's a steady decline. I mean, again, I've said this many times. We've got down here in the southeast, we've got BBC Kent, we've got BBC Sussex, BBC Surrey, three separate radio stations, all employing separate staffs, all employing different presenters. That can't last forever, can it? They need to start. I mean, whenever the BBC are told to make some cuts, why don't they just shut two of those stations and make it, you know, BBC Southeast or something?
Well, Mike, listen, I have a lot of friends there and I'm conflicted because I don't want to see anyone on the dole. I believe that the management have made some awful decisions and they're doubling down with their...
You wouldn't mind seeing some of the management on the dole, I would imagine.
Well, look, Mike, I'm not vindictive, believe it or not. I think the fact that I've got this message out is as much, if you like, quote-unquote revenge that they could ever think of because they've just ditched a radio presenter who's not financially dependent on them. Normally, when radio presenters get ditched by the BBC, they stay stumped, they behave, they're good little boys or girls because they want some cover work and maybe a new gig at a local radio station like BBC Coventry, which is closer to me than Birmingham anyway. Now, my morals, Mike, are more important and getting the message out about how old people are treated and thought of than me thinking, well, keep your mouth shut, Dan, because you may get some cover work. It's more important to me that people know the truth.
Yeah. So what are you going to do? I see you've got a little nice seaside background there, Danny. You're down on the south coast, I think, aren't you?
Well, I think if I just move to my left, a couple of your 90-foot sunseekers should come into view, Mike.
Very good.
So, yeah, we're in Plymouth. I thought that would take everyone away. And you try getting somewhere which is a four-story penthouse with a rooftop terrace overlooking a harbour. You try and get that cheap in the current supply and demand market in the United Kingdom.
Yeah. Absolutely right. And I mean, the thing I find fascinating, Danny, is we talk about the BBC all the time. We talk to an organisation called Defund the BBC all the time. And we tell people the problem for the BBC is not that it's diverse, because whenever they say we're going to make it more diverse and we're going to hire more presenters who might have got a different colour skin to the people that we used to have, they're all still terribly middle class, aren't they? And the great thing, Danny, about talking to guys like yourself, you've got real life experience. You know, you're not one of these, you know, people that's just been to university, come out, been a, you know, production assistant and then somehow ended up on the air.
Yeah, the problem with the BBC, Mike, is that they keep employing people like themselves in management. So they are typically, if you like, left-footed, liberal, middle class, no real connection with the gritty reality of what our target audience should be, which are, I don't know what the code word is, 2CD, or so, I don't know what they're called, but they're white working class people in estates around Birmingham and Wolverhampton, and they're in their mid-40s, and they don't want to hear, Mike, you won't believe this, mate, just to show how out of touch one of the last bosses was, she actually interrupted my show so that we could take live the call to prayer on air. It is unbelievable, but if you question that, then they'll say, what's wrong with you? Are you an Islamophobe?
Yeah.
I said, no, but our audience read the Daily Mail. They don't read the Guardian.
Right.
What's wrong with you?
Right. But also, you know, it's a ludicrous idea. I mean, you wouldn't play the church bells on a Sunday morning, would you? Or if you did, you should. But then you should play all, you know, maybe you should go to the local synagogue on a Saturday and play something from there.
Yeah, I mean, they're petrified of their own skin, mate. You know, and the weird thing was, Mike, and you know, they've got rid of me, and I'm a freelancer, the rest of the staff, so they're always going to get rid of freelancers first. The weird thing is, mate, I had the most diverse bunch of people ring into my show. I've never had so many Mohammeds call my show. I was the most popular guy amongst taxi drivers in the West Midlands, and we had West Indians, and we had, of course, old white people, which, yeah, of course, they
but
no
that's,
longer
But that's
care
the other
about.
Thing, Danny, that they make the mistake of thinking that the Mohammeds that are driving the taxis and the Wolverhampton guy who's been living there all of his life because he was born there, he just happens to not be white. They all supposedly think in a different way, and they don't read The Guardian either.
No, they don't. And they're obsessed with bringing a lineup to the station that represents the demographics of the West Midlands. Mm. But I'm sorry, but if you go and ask people of West Indian heritage and Indian subcontinent heritage whether they want to see someone with black or brown skin presenting a show, they'll say no. I'm more interested in the content of what comes out of their mouth rather than the particular voice.
Yes, and it's very condescending, I think, for the BBC to operate like this, and it's got to end in tears, isn't it?
Well, I mean, listen, BBC WM is disproportionately losing the most amount of listeners of any BBC local radio station. For the last six audience sweeps, Mike, we've gone down and down and down and down and down, and we're on an all-time record. And the bosses, rather than being thoroughly ashamed about it, they're doubling down with their stupidity about what they believe our audience wants. It's almost like conversion therapy, Mike.
Yeah.
It's like our bosses want our audience to feel certain ways about certain stories, and they've just voted with their feet, mate.
Well, I'm very glad that you've managed to push a load of them over my way, Danny, so thank you very much for that. And next time you're in London, I'll buy you lunch. Thanks very much indeed. Good to talk to you. Have a great holiday. Danny Kelly reporting in to us from Plymouth, from the rooftop of a place that he's got down there. Imagine being kicked out of BBC West Midlands because the wokists think that he's not the right face any longer for radio. You see what I did there?
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Well, it broke on my show yesterday, the news basically that Billy Gilmour, one of the Scottish players, number 23 in the game against England, tested positive for COVID. It then sort of threw everybody into a bit of a tailspin. Nobody was sure precisely what was going to happen next. It now turns out that two England players have also now been told they can't play in their game tonight against the Czech Republic. Let's say a very good afternoon to Glenn Hoddle, former England manager. Glenn, a very good afternoon to you.
Hello, Mike.
How are you doing?
Very good. I hope you're well.
Yeah, very well indeed. I must say, I'm really enjoying the Euros, actually. I don't know whether it's because we've been sort of starved. I found it quite difficult to watch an awful lot of football without the crowds that we've had over the course of the last season. I watched the Champions League final, enjoyed that. But I'm really liking the Euros tournament. I think there's been some great games, there's been some great goals, and some real drama.
Yeah, it's started really well, hasn't it? And I think the refereeing's been good as well. But one of the main things is having fans in the stadium, isn't it? It's wonderful to have that little bit of atmosphere, as we saw England Scotland game particularly was really really good atmosphere, even though there was 22,000 in the stadium or so.
Yeah.
So it started well, this tournament. I think for England's sake, it's going to get better and better, because I don't think we've played anywhere near how well we can.
I mean, as you'll know better than anyone, Glenn, there is this terrible kind of roller coaster ride that everybody gets on because, you know, the first game against Croatia, suddenly England were world beaters, they're going to win everything and fantastic. And then they play against Scotland, not such a great result, but it's an OK result. But then, you know, we're now the worst team in history. But the truth is, the 4 points will ensure that England qualify. And last night, sure enough, that was confirmed.
This is quite unusual for us, because normally we're all sitting on the edge of our seats, biting our nails, going into the last group game and trying to get into the knockout stages. Well, this is different. We've not played at our very best yet, and we're 4 points, as you say, and we've already qualified. So I think Gareth, you know, will tinker with the side a little bit. It gives him that scope to actually tinker, and we might see a slightly different team than he would have put out if we have that to win and we were under that immense pressure.
Yeah, I mean, so, what is that pressure like, Glenn? How is it different, say, from being a club manager when you're in charge of the national team? Because people look upon it really as more than just a football job, don't they?
Yeah, it is. I mean, when it comes to a tournament, you know, Mike, it's a Euros or a World Cup. For 6 weeks, you're more important than the Prime Minister. Your decisions you're making, the whole country is is looking at, and they're analysing, and their hopes and dreams are on your shoulders and the player's shoulders. So it is that big, you know, it really is. Mm. And you have to keep a cool head. And I think that's where Gareth has got that sort of cool head. I had him as a player in 98.
Right.
Very astute, but very calm sort of player. That's how he is. If you lose, he's not going to worry too much, and he doesn't go over the top if you win. And I think that's what the squad needs.
Right.
You
know? And what about tonight? What's he going to miss about not being able to pick Mason Mount and Ben Chilwell? I mean, the papers today were saying it's all chaos now. Everything's been thrown up in the air. He's going to have to change, presumably, his plan.
Well, he'll have to change, and I think he's going to change anyway for this game. If I'm honest, I think he'll tinker with it, as I say, because we're already through. I don't think it'll hurt him too much. I think it might be an opportunity to put Jack Grealish in the side, straight in for Mount. I think we have got cover. Certainly going forward, I've always felt England's squad is a strong squad going forward. Our doubts is defensively, but I think it might be in a situation where we'll put Grealish in, which I think. You know, anyone going to the game, all them fans going to the stadium, I think will want to see Jack start if he can. And I think this is a great opportunity for Gareth to start.
Yeah, exactly right. And some of the criticism has come from those who say that, you know, people like Harry Kane are not getting the ball enough. They're not getting the service that he should be getting. He's looking a bit sort of tired. He's looking like he's not really quite at the races. What do you think about that? Is Harry 100% fit?
Harry's 100% fit. He's just gone through a couple of games where he's been a bit sluggish. Let's be fair, England haven't played anywhere near their best yet, and neither has Harry. But I think, you know, if they create the chances, Harry will put the ball in the back of the net. You've got to look at 96 when Alan Shearer wasn't doing it going into a tournament.
Yes.
And he ended up, you know, he ended up scoring against big games. The bigger the game and the harder the opponent, Harry Kane, you want him in your team. And I think that's where Gareth understands that. You know, as we go in the tournament, hopefully we'll go deep into the tournament, I think Harry will get better and better. I really do.
Yeah.
No worries about Harry.
And I mean, the roadway to the sort of, say, the quarterfinals or semifinals, where we're told there will be more people allowed to go into Wembley. Even the final might even be like 2/3 full, which would be tremendous. Can England go that far, do you think? I mean, they've got the possibility of playing Germany, maybe, which is always a bit of a nightmare.
I think we can. I think, you know, I think it's about getting the momentum, as I said. It's not how you start a tournament, it's how you finish. It is more important in many ways. Mm. But I think the fact that we might play more difficult opposition if we win the group, but I think it's key to staying at Wembley. And I think it also spins off to the country, to the nation. I think by having fans and more fans at Wembley is a major advantage to us. I really do. And I think also if you can't get to the stadium, then going to the pub, going and watch the game to the pub and having that good feel factor like we had in the World Cup. You know, I think Green King research tells two out of five people want to watch things in the pub.
Yeah.
And I think having the squad, having that sort of feel, that feel-good factor with the nation, which we had in Russia, is important. And I think, you know, more fans at the stadium to get the atmosphere going, I think the squad will respond to that. They know how big it is for the for the country to get behind the England team. And let's face it, we've had an awful time with this pandemic. Mm. It's wonderful that they can go in the stadium. It's wonderful that they can go and watch it in the pub and be together. You know, set aside your club side and come together as one with England.
I mean, that was one of the great things about seeing the Scots in London, even though they left a bit of a mess behind them in Leicester Square and, you know, caused a few problems. And there were some rather funny videos going on. It was just great to see a crowd of football fans enjoying themselves, wasn't it?
It certainly was, and it made a great atmosphere. You know, only 22,000 there, but it was brilliant. Because also, you need not just one set of fans to make an atmosphere in a stadium or even in a pub. You want that sort of that response against each other. As long as they behave and they're okay, and unfortunately, you know, it was they're all well behaved at the stadium. I remember the times when the Tartan Army came down and got on top of the crossbar.
I actually know people in Glasgow, Glenn, that have still got some of that turf in a little glass case. They've still got it. They've never given it up.
Absolutely. Probably got the crossbar as well.
They probably have some of them, yeah, absolutely. Who else have you liked? I mean, it looks like Italy, France, and now after their last performance, Germany are looking pretty strong. Portugal as well. I mean, who would England least like to meet in the next round, do you think?
Listen, I think if we win the group, we're going to be facing Germany or probably Portugal. But yeah. I think if you're going to win the tournament, you're going to have to beat France.
Yeah.
France is the best team in the tournament, in my opinion. They've got such a balanced squad. There's some good sides out there, without doubt. Belgium, you know, I did fancy Italy to go to the final. This was way before the tournament started. I think that they're a team now that have gone unbeaten for so long. I think it's 9 or 10 games, and they haven't conceded a goal. So they're going to be dangerous as well. But England, if they get themselves going, to a certain degree, as I said, this tournament starts tonight for England. It starts tonight. And if we start winning games, playing well, and get the momentum going, my word, you know, and the country get behind them, we could be onto something special. But it just concerns me against the top teams how we defend. We're going to have to defend well.
Yeah, and Wales have done brilliantly, of course, again. And what about Scotland tonight? What chance do you give them to get something out of the Croatia game?
I give them a good chance, because Croatia are not the team as they were, you know, in the World Cup when we played them. They're an ageing side that have just sort of gone over the hillside a little bit. I think Steve Clarke's done a fabulous job. He really has done a great job with this set of players that he's got with Scotland. He's got them organised. And I think, you know, the fact is a strange one. The fact they haven't scored yet in the tournament, yet they're still actually can qualify, is going to make it a massive... Again, fans at Hampden, I think it's, you know, it's a great opportunity for them to qualify.
No, I think so. Well, Glenn, we'll be watching it tonight. Thanks very much indeed for joining us. Good luck. Glenn Hoddle, their former England manager, giving us his verdict on what's happening tonight, what will happen. It has been a very exciting tournament. I mean, I've enjoyed it more than I thought I would, to be honest. But actually, not so much the England games as all the other ones, to be honest, because they've all been terrific, many of them. Denmark last night was extraordinary. Great game against Russia. Absolutely tremendous.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB, online, or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration. And Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing in context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's GRAMMARLY.com/podcast. Easier said, done.